The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 461, to be broadcast on Wednesday, November 19th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. I am recently back from a trip to Chicago, and Fran is at work. So here I am trying to get our show together for the broadcast tomorrow. Anyway, Bicycle Show is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can comment right down here below on my Facebook Live that I'm producing right now. Or you can send me, if you're listening to an audio file, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Well, it's the deadly problem with bike lanes. Most cyclists know that bike lanes offer very limited physical protection. They might not know that they offer an approximately zero level of legal protection either. Now, why does this bring brought up? Well, I went to Chicago this past weekend to go out and spend a long weekend with my son. And of course, there's bike lanes everywhere. There's bikes everywhere. It's really cool. It's a city that got it and figured it out and is getting better at it as they go along. And I step off the train coming out of Chicago O'Hare, and I'm heading down to my son's apartment, which is only about a half mile walk away, so it's pretty close. And I had to be very careful crossing the bike lane. The bike lanes were protected. It was on what would they call Milwaukee Avenue, and the bike lanes are protected, so they've got parallel parking on one side of the bike lane and then sidewalk on the other side of the bike lane. But boy, you got to be real careful when you step out into that bike lane when you're getting ready to cross at the crosswalk, because the cyclists, they don't really watch for the pedestrians. That's a little unnerving and unfortunate, but anyway, I got buzzed pretty close by a bicycle that was screaming down the bike lane. Not any fault to them, whatever. You know, I tend to be bike friendly, so whatever. Hey, you like my new shirt here? I got a brand new shirt. It says Bike Lanes Save Lives. If you're on Facebook Live and you can't read that because it looks like it's backwards, it's because Facebook did something weird to there. Anyway, we know they did something weird. Anyway, that's the way things come out on there now. So anyway, yeah, the bike lanes were very, very interesting. I have another rant, Trump to decimate transportation. Yep. He is the fun stuff goes on from Washington, D.C. Boy, oh boy. They just don't get it. Anyway, that's beside the point. There's all sorts of other problems down there. I'm not going to get into that right now because that could take more than one episode to cover. But and I don't want to get too political, even though I am political, because I'm a cyclist and I am very politically oriented towards cycling. And so therefore, I like to I like to talk about it a lot, but that's beside the point. Let's go on to a positive side, and I'll go back to some of this stuff. Interesting things going on in Chicago. So I would say that Chicago has really been getting it together. I've reported on them in the past. I've been out there in the past and been very, very impressed with what I see. Lots of bike share going on out there. The bike share is relatively inexpensive. If you take a look at it, it's about a month and a half's cost of a rail/bus pass. So that would be for an entire year, and you could actually not even have to own a bicycle in Chicago. You could use the bike share bikes, and they've got quite an extensive system of bike share bikes in Chicago, as they do in many, many cities now. So that's pretty cool. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the show. But I was just really, really impressed with the infrastructure and how things are developing. I believe the last time I was there, they did not have the same level of infrastructure as they have now. And I was there back in April for my son's wedding. So it's pretty cool what they're doing in Chicago. I'm very, very impressed. And as I watched people ride by on their bicycles, I just kept thinking to myself, I should have a bike out here because this would be a cool thing. Maybe in the future, I could possibly have something sitting in my son's garage. He does have a garage that he doesn't use behind his apartment. So maybe I could bring a bike out and hang it there and then use it when I'm out the next time. But yeah, we'll see. I could also get into their bike share system. Their bike share system, you can either rent by the day or you can rent by the month or you can rent by the year. So you can, you know, however, whatever works for you is good. So it's just an interesting way of getting around. Greg does not ride a bicycle in Chicago. He uses mass transit and has gotten very, very good at it since he's been there for so long. And so he uses the train, he uses the buses, and that's the way he gets around. So that's great. And he also walks a lot. By the way, just to let you know how much you walk when you're in a city and how I give it two thumbs up in a really big way. I spent three full days in Chicago and walked 18 and a half miles in those 3 days. So the boy walks. He walks a lot, and so did I. So that was kind of fun. And it's always interesting. I got a great tour of his neighborhood. He lives in the Logan Square section of Chicago. And it's just cool what they're doing out there. They've got more transportation projects going on right now. They're extremely bike friendly and pedestrian friendly. So it's really a pretty neat thing. So anyway, I'll talk a little bit more about, you know, my visits and sightings and things that I saw while there, and we'll get back to that more in the show. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips, the 75 rule. What is the 75 rule in cycling? There's a overview here. The 75 rule in cycling is a training principle that recommends at least 75% of your weekly riding should be done at or below 75% of your maximum heart rate or functional threshold power, FTP. I have talked about this in previous shows. I'm just bringing it back up again for all my speedy friends on bicycles that feel like they need to be going ultra fast every time they get on their bike, which is not really what you should be doing. But yeah, no, sometimes it takes some of us longer to learn than others. So this is also known as spending most of your training time in zones 1 and 2, which is low heart rate, folks, low, which builds aerobic endurance. The remaining 25% of your time then is dedicated to higher intensity efforts like interval training to improve your speed and power. Not everybody wants to go out and race their bike. Not everybody wants to go fast in their bike. And not everybody really cares about improving on their bike. They just want to ride their bike. I get it. I totally get it. But, you know, if you are interested, that 75 rule is a pretty good rule to go by. So, moving on, I got, this is the, so yeah, this goes to the "so you think you're tough" department. So I have a piece out of Momentum magazine. Let's see if I can pull that up here. And I call this the "so you think you're tough." Here are the top cycling tips, winter cycling tips from Montreal. Yes, sirree, Montreal. And it's snowy Montreal. Yeah, it gets up there. They get a lot of snow up in Montreal. Once you get over that Canadian border, they sit pretty high and they do get snow. And snow is something that we don't see too much here in Connecticut anymore, or not at the quantities that we used to. We still get snow. We just don't get it at the same levels that we used to get it, which makes winter cycling a little bit more bearable, although we do get a lot of rain and we still get cold. So, As a matter of fact, I came back from Chicago, and it was colder here than it was in Chicago for the past 3 days. Chicago is experiencing a nice little warm streak, and I saw mid-60s in Chicago for a couple of days while I was out there. Pretty nice. It was great for walking around, that's for sure. Very, very nice. And great for cycling. A lot of people on their bikes. I saw a lot of cargo bikes, which is interesting. Parents with their kids in the cargo bikes. My son's wife works, Amanda works in a school, and it's a private school, and the parents often bring their kids to school by bicycle because that's what they're doing. Progressive, very smart, and a cool thing. So these cargo bikes are becoming very, very popular in the cities. I think they're really cool, especially cool if you live in a place like Chicago where there's not a hill to be found. The biggest hills I climbed in Chicago were the stairs going up to the overhead trains, or the stairs coming out of the underground trains. So, you know, it's just generally it is very, very flat there, which is makes it a lot more conducive to cycling and with a fair amount of ease. But let's go to Montreal. Montreal, Canada, which is in the Quebec region. Okay, winter cycling is glorious. Sure it is, yeah. But most parts of Canada and a large stretch of the United States, the snow and ice can be a problem. So here's what they do in Montreal. Ah, boy, oh boy, oh boy. Winter cycling tips often depend on location. So this comes out of Momentum magazine or Momentum website, however you want to look at this. They wanted to get serious about it, so they went to North America's most friendly and serious cold cities, Montreal, Quebec. Winter cycling, it says here, of course, it's glorious, but it's definitely considerably more challenging. And we've seen flashes of the fanciful Europeans cycling in droves in the wintertime. They've set a really high bar, but North Americans are improving as well. Despite having longer than average commute times, very car-centric roadways, and like just way too many pickup trucks, you know, who needs those things in the city anyway? You know, that is something I will comment on. I saw less pickup trucks in Chicago than we have around here, like far less. Very interesting. Why do you need a pickup truck in Chicago anyway? I tell you what, if I owned a pickup truck in Chicago, I would own a service. I would run a like an Uber or a Lyft or something like that, that was just oriented towards helping out people that need to transport things that don't own cars. It's if someone's not doing that yet, I'm sure someone's doing that. It would be a really nice service, and I think you could do fairly well with it, because I said to my son, so what do you do if you have to go to, like, you know, pick up a piece of furniture or do this or do that? Well, we got to find a friend who has a car. You know, I'm telling you, there's an opportunity there. But anyway, there are not that many pickup trucks, and that is kind of refreshing, quite honestly. This is to talk a little bit more about winter cycling tips, especially when it comes to what to ride and what to ride on. They checked with a bicycle shop called Allo Velo Bike Shop to shine some light on the very chilly subject. And the owner of the shop says, I speak more for Montreal, but the increased bicycle network and dedicated snow removal in the city, more and more people are choosing to continue cycling in the winter months, he says. Over the years, the city has tested a variety of methods to make the paths safer, like salt, sand, brine, sweeping machines, and plows. It's a good mix of different formulas, but it's great that cycling in the winter is recognized by the city. Snow clearing of the bike lanes is not universal, and it could take some advocacy work on the part of cyclists, but many of the major urban centers have begun. So that's a great thing. In cities like New York, snow clearing of bike lanes still takes a backseat to clear the fossil fuel roadways, making getting around on two wheels a serious safety issue. Will any bicycle do the trick? Well, one question is often front and center when considering a move to cycling is not to get a secondhand beater bike for the snowy season. Really? That's interesting. We welcome and encourage any client of ours to try winter cycling, and it doesn't have to be complicated or expensive. If you don't want to use your summer commuter bike, we recommend finding an older secondhand mountain bike and simply adding winter tires and fenders. I thought they said they would not get. Anyway, we don't advise you to use high-end bikes as the salt and slush will cause some corrosion. Expect to change your bicycle cables and pads regularly by spring. Timmons also says that older mountain bikes with 26-inch wheels are a really good option, as this style will keep the center of gravity a little bit lower. In addition to having a good gear ratio, wide handlebars for control, and wider tires, most likely you can make it through the winter. But if it's your first time, even if you have studded tires on your bike, it makes all the difference. And a studded tire in the front makes a bigger difference than anything else. And that brings it to the second point, snow tires for winter cycling. Question people grapple with when the snow approaches are whether or not to invest in winter bike tires. And he says here in Montreal, we get a lot of ice buildup and deep freezes and snow removal. Snow plows remove the snow, but leave a thin layer of ice. So having studded tires will give you confidence to ride on icy surfaces. I agree with this. Absolutely. If you're going to ride in this situation, a studded tire just makes all the sense of the world. I got my first pair of studded tires years ago when I was a rep in the bicycle industry, and I figured I'd try a pair out, right? I was selling them. I wanted to experience them, so I put some studded tires on. Now, not being a guy that likes to get out in the real cold weather or want to ride my bike on icy streets, I decided the best place for me to check out my studded tires was on the lake behind my house. And the lake behind my house, often back in the day, I'm not going to say anymore because we're experiencing a very major warming trend here right now, but we used to get up to a foot of ice on the lake behind my house at Mansfield Hollow. So I took it to the lake, figured, let's see how this baby works. And wow, amazing. I had the studded tires on mountain bike, and I could literally lay the bike over on the turns on the lake. And we're talking pure ice, no snow, just pure ice. And they grab unbelievably well. It's almost scary. Now, some of those winter tires, just so you know, or maybe all of them, I know that they do this with road tires also for cars, they're designed with a different compound, a different rubber compound, and that different rubber compound tends to react better in the cold and be stickier on the surface in cold weather. The downside to that is once the weather gets above a certain temperature, you start wearing those tires out very, very quickly. And the same will happen with the bike tires. So anyway, I was riding on a set of tires that were out of Sweden, I think, is where they make Nokian tires. And they were exceptional. And after that, I actually ended up putting a set of those not studded, but regular Nokian winter tires in my car. And they were just like, I couldn't believe that you could have that kind of control on slippery surfaces like that in the wintertime. But anyway, great thing to do as if you're planning on riding in the winter on any kind of ice or mixed condition road surface. They really work well. As it gets darker sooner, you definitely want to be seen by other road users. So you want to make sure you have proper lighting on your bike. And these guys recommend having lights that are at least 100 to 200 lumens for day and night. I would say definitely at least that. I like to ride with a 400 lumen light on my handlebars and another 300 or 400 on my helmet, actually, because boy, you're just lit up like a Christmas tree when you go down the road. And it's real, real easy to see where you're going. And if you need to make a turn, you can turn your head and that will direct the light to where you're turning. It's even more effective than a car headlight in that case. So you also have to learn how to embrace the winter. And winter is riding in the winter doesn't need to have a steep learning curve, but it has challenges like riding in a snowstorm. Yeah, have you ever ridden in a snowstorm? I have. You know, it's definitely one of those boxes I can say I could check off. I was not planning on it, but I was out on a bicycle ride and I hit what we call a snow squall. And if you live in the winter areas, you know what a snow squall is. It's an autumn, all of a sudden, out of the blue, snow coming down like a blizzard in front of you, but only for maybe 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes max, and then it's gone. But it could drop down as much as a couple inches of snow on the road at the time. And I was out on a bike ride because I was training for bicycle racing back in the day, and I found myself caught in the middle of a snow squall. And it was cold and it was tricky, and you know, I didn't have studded tires on my bike. I just, you know, was riding my bike, that's all. So it was exceptionally tricky, but then it went away, and then the roads melted very quickly, and you know, I had a very wet and cold body, so I boogied my butt back home so I could get warm, hopped into a hot shower, and you know, that was that. So yeah, that's basically the rundown on people that ride regularly in places like Montreal. Remember, Minneapolis, Minnesota, another really, really, really cold place, but one of the top 10 places for bicycle infrastructure in the United States. They plow their bike lanes in the wintertime. Obviously, Montreal does the same thing. So it can be done. Just letting you know, it can be done. So there's a few tips. I would prefer to ride indoors. If you are concerned about riding outdoors in that kind of weather, then, as you should be, then don't. You know, you can ride indoors. There's lots of things you can do. There's lots of sophisticated indoor cycling equipment now. There are local gyms that offer spin classes and have very nice and sophisticated bicycles. I work at one of those. I actually work at two of those, but I only teach spinning at one of them. And they're great if you're looking to you know, to stay fit over the wintertime or maintain your fitness. I like to call winter cycling indoors as fitness maintenance and cycling maintenance more than training. I mean, you can use it for training, but it's just really not the same as riding outside on the road. That's been my experience. If you have a different experience, please let me know. I know there are some people that focus on their fitness training over the wintertime and come out super, super strong. I tend to come out fit enough to get back on my bike and feel like a human being again when I get back on my bicycle. I still find there's a transition period once I do get back on the bike. And I always find that my first day on the bicycle after being indoors for 70 or 80 or 90 hours, sometimes it adds up to being that much, tends to be a little bit of a rude awakening. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to be so fit. I'm going to be, you know, I put in all this time. I've done the hard work, and I get on my bike and it's like, how did the hills get so big over the wintertime? I call it frost heaves, but we won't get into that. That's just a private joke. And, you know, something I say to people when they go, oh man, the hills just got a lot bigger. And it's like, well, you know, frost heaves. Anyway, if you don't know what a frost heave is, you've never lived in cold weather. But we will move on. So let's go on to something I spoke about. We're going into content of the show here now. And let's talk about a few different things. I gotta say, some of the things that are out there, that are happening, are scary to me. There's an article from, this is from Outside or / Bicycling Magazine, The Deadly Problem with Bike Lanes. Most cyclists know that bike lanes are offer a limited physical protection. They may not know that they offer approximately zero legal protection too. So yeah, bike lanes are great until they're not. And I would say that they are best when they are protected on both sides. the right way to do it, if you're doing urban planning in your town, is to offer parallel parking on the outside of the bike lane. It gives a great, huge, big, fat metal buffer so that if a car were to try to approach the bike lane, they would hit another car before they got there. So it really helps, and it also is a visual thing. It tends to narrow the road up a little bit, which tends to calm the traffic a little bit, which is all good. This is all good, good, good stuff. So, you know, bike lanes can be spacious. They can be really, really well identified. There can be, you know, really well done lineage in the road. Toilet paper signs called sharrows in the road. That's what we call them, toilet paper signs. But it's definitely, if you don't have any of that outside protection, it's still not going to be super safe. So the bike lane, if you're going to do it, it's better to be on something that is protected. Now, sometimes you have no alternative. Fran and I are probably going to be going down, well, not probably, we are going to be going down to Florida in the early part of January, and of course Fran's mom lives down there, so we go down and we visit her and we wish her a happy birthday, because that's when her birthday is, and we ride our bikes down there because we have a couple of bikes set up down there, so that once we get there, all we have to do is put air on the tires and go for a ride. So it's quite nice, actually, very, very nice. But it is a lot of times it is the classic two lines on the side of the road with the sharrow indicator in the middle of that line. And boy, the drivers in Florida are, I am going to pick on them. They're terrible. They're not great drivers. They do not have a good track record. Maybe it's the age issue, because a lot of people retire in Florida. Maybe it's the issue of the people that do retire in Florida tend to come from a very aggressive northeast part of the country. Some come from, you know, Canada. Some come from the Midwest. There's direct shots right down to Florida there. But boy, I tell you, the drivers are just not real great in Florida. You really have to be paying a lot of attention to what's going on. So you might end up getting yourself in a situation where you run into a close encounter of the worst kind, as we call it. And it doesn't even matter. It could be that the driver could be cited for failing to yield to a cyclist in a bike lane, and that there's no authority to support the DA's contention that the protections of the bike lane extended into an intersection. And then when you get to an intersection, it's a free-for-all. So, you know, what are you going to do? The other part of it is that the cyclist may not be exercising due care, and that is something that comes out very lately in court, and it's very unfortunate that it is looked at that way. But in this country, we have a thing that happens where if there is an altercation between a bicycle and a motorized vehicle, it is often, and I'm not even going to say often, I'm going to say always assumed, that's a pretty general statement, but that the cyclist was at fault because they shouldn't be there, which is not true, by the way, folks. It is not true. The cyclist belongs on the road as much as the motorized vehicle does. Why? Because the bicycle is a vehicle by definition. Different states have different rules, but here in Connecticut, the rule is that a bicycle is a vehicle of transportation. So therefore, it does belong on the roads. And I won't even get into my rants about sidewalks, because I hate bicycles on sidewalks, and my town allows it, and I don't like that a whole lot, but if you're not given enough infrastructure of which to ride the bike safely, it sometimes is the only safe place to ride the bicycle. Just remember, folks, and especially those of you who are listening here on campus at the University of Connecticut, if you do choose a sidewalk to ride on, it is at pedestrian speed. I know you've heard me say this a lot in the show, but this is not rocket science. It's common sense. It's really common sense. If you hit someone going 20 miles an hour on a bicycle or going 20 miles an hour in a car, that person is going to get hurt. And maybe you too if you're on a bicycle. So don't do that. Don't do it. Really, it's crazy. And obey the rules of the road. All these things will keep you safer. And, it's just, once again, it is common sense, not rocket science, not brain surgery. Both of those are probably performed by people who ride their bicycles to work, by the way. But anyway, so what is a cyclist supposed to do when a car approaches from behind? Does the legal system expect us to have eyes in the back of our heads? Well, sort of, kind of. Why don't you have eyes in the back of your head? There's great visual tools out there to take care of that problem. We have lovely things on our that we can put on our bikes that, I know, they're geeky. For those of you who are like Uber athletes on their bicycles, don't want to put mirrors on your bike, put a mirror on your bike, damn it. Just do it. It's worth it. Because you get to see what's coming up behind you and what might be running you over before they do that. And it gives you a chance for evasive action and a way to bail out of a really potentially dangerous situation. I also use radar on my bike. I talk about radar a lot on this show. I will continue to talk about radar a lot on this show because I think it is possibly one of the best innovations of bicycle safety I have seen in at least a couple of decades. So maybe more, maybe in my entire cycling career and world. And I am not a young man anymore, so I've seen a lot. I also have, where is it? Yep, it's a wooden desk. Knock on wood. I've never been hit by a car when riding my bike. And I've been on my bike since I was an early teenager. I was on my bike probably from about 12 years old on up. I was riding on the open roads pretty regularly. My dad had a business and he often needed help with that business, and the call would come in and I would hop on my bike and I'd ride over. He had a service station. He was an automobile mechanic, and I would just ride my bike over there. And when I went to visit friends in town, I rode my bike everywhere. That's it. So I've been on the road for a long time, and to not have had an encounter with a car, which has been of major concern, I've had some close calls. That's a pretty good track record, but I am also super careful when I'm out there. I really am. And that's really what you have to understand. And even if you do have the right of way, assume that the person that is driving the motorized vehicle has not a clue that you do. They only know about what they know. And you can't assume that they are going to be able to understand your situation when you're riding your bike. So ride responsibly, ride smart, and use your hand signals, use your eyes to make contact. It's all real, real good. So, the whole idea behind this was that, bike lanes are going to offer you some protection. It's not always true. It really isn't. So please be careful no matter what you're doing out there. Please, please, please be careful, because there's more cities painting more bike lanes and more cyclists using them, and the urgency to address the legal gray area is going to grow. And obviously, protected bike lanes where cyclists and motor vehicles are physically separated give riders a more physical protection. But even then, the chaos of the intersections needs to be fixed. So, yeah, we're not there yet. But we'll get there. We'll get there. I know we will. I've got a real strong feeling about this, and I know that we're going to get there at some point. So let us move on to the next part of the show. And let's see. Oh, yeah. So it just drives me crazy. And I know others, too. what is happening with this current administration and their ability to dismantle something that was really going in a great direction. So I'm being a little selfish about this. So bicycles mean a lot to me. So alternative transportation and energy mean a lot to me. That doesn't seem to be the case with the current administration. So when you're talking about taking away money from transit, this administration seems to be very, very, very good at it. So anyway, the White House wants Congress to eliminate billions in federal transit money that serves as the background of transportation systems across America, and it will hit the red states the hardest without even accomplishing the administration's stated goal of stabilizing highway funding and giving drivers their fair share. Politico's Chris Marquette reported late last week that the Trump administration had advanced a pair of problematic proposals that would gouge a $30+ billion hole in our budgets of transit agencies across America and upend decades of transportation funding precedent. Under the first proposal, policymakers in Congress would write the next major federal transportation bill, which they are racing to pass when the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs expires in September of 2026, to exclude the so-called mass transit account of the Highway Trust Fund, which has historically reserved about 20% of gas dollars for transit agencies. That account exists in part out of a recognition that funding transit also helps drivers by shifting motorists out of traffic jams and onto trains and buses, as well as providing a host of direct and indirect benefits for all the U.S. residents. Under the second proposal, Congress would strip states' ability to flex their highway funding to transit projects, essentially eliminating local self-determination, which had long been championed by conservatives as a bulwark against federal power. Worse, the two proposals still wouldn't put a dent in the highway trust fund's decades-old deficit, which the Congressional Budget Office projects will swell to roughly $40 billion in a year by 2027. The deficit has grown in part because Congress has essentially allowed state transportation departments to keep expanding highways way past the point that they can afford to maintain them without increasing federal gas tax or other revenues to match. If the White House's proposals advance, experts warn that they could deepen car dependency and increase the strain on the nation's crumbling roads, as well as spurring car crashes, congestions, and more. At the same time, the move would saddle states that do value transit with staggering new bills to keep those systems running and no clear path to pay them. Oh, man. It's just a mess, guys. It's just a big, fat mess. And the proposal will not solve the Highway Trust Fund's issues when it runs out of money. It'll only kick the can down the road by not another year. It's not really a red state, blue state thing. All states rely on transit. And really, more states that are traditionally thought of as red or rural actually depend on mass transit account and federal highway funding flexing more than blue urban states do. It's not only bad for transit, it just doesn't solve the actual policy issues. Eliminating mass transit account wouldn't just fail to solve the federal budget issue, it would also put giant holes in state budgets. So anyway, there it is. It's out there. I'm going to move on because I have, I hate to use this expression for all you horse lovers, but I've beaten this dead horse long enough for this show. And we're going to go on to some other fun things that are going on. And I found that the city of Chicago, I'm going to go back to the city of Chicago. So the city of Chicago has bikeways, and they have a Streets for Cycling plan, which came out in 2020. They have a bike lane design guide. You can go to their Chicago Transportation website, and you can find all these different things that are there. Multi-use trails run all through Chicago. Paved trails are for all users, including walkers, skaters, runners, and people riding bikes. And those trails include the Burnham Greenway, the Lakefront Trail, the Major Taylor Trail, the North Branch Trail, the North Shore Channel Trail, the Saguenash Trail, and a future trail called the Bloomingdale Trail. And there's just some really cool stuff. They also have this really cool trail that they put in that is using one of the classic upper level train tracks. So it's an abandoned train track that used to house transit, and they made it into a giant park. New York City is doing the exact same thing. They've got one they're working on right now. If it's not done, if not done yet, that's also happening. It's so cool because you get up on top of this. I talked about this in my last show. You get up on top of these things and you're sitting up really high, like right up where the trains are, the overhead trains are, and you're looking down on the city. You can look down on neighborhoods. It's just so cool. What a great use of an abandoned train trail. It's really, really wonderful. So why not put bike lanes on all major streets? Why aren't we doing this? Well, here's the reason why. Those big major streets tend to be not really built for much more than the cars that are on them, so there's not enough room. The only way we could do that is by taking away a parallel parking lane or a travel lane, more so than a parallel parking lane, and that gets complicated because then it congests the traffic again, pinches it up a little bit, does slow people down, but it also tends to aggravate people who are driving motorized vehicles too. Nothing I like better than to aggravate people who drive motorized vehicles, but you know what? That's what it is. So bike lanes do make the average person feel safer about biking on city streets. They also cut down on weaving and making streets safer for everyone. So that's what it is. So there's a whole segment here, and you can click on a number of different places to learn more about it, what bikeways are, how they work. Bike maps, you can pull down that and view and download Chicago area bicycle maps. Chicago is definitely moving forward. It's a really, really good thing. And the other thing is that there are now some of the transit, now not during peak hours, but there are some of the trains that will allow, and buses that will allow you to bring your bike on board. So if you're looking to get from one place to another and you have a transit route which is well supported by buses and or trains, and that will get you there faster, and then once you get off you can then ride your bicycle to where you want to go, that option does exist. But it is really important to understand that it is not allowed during the busiest times of transit. And the reason is because those trains are busy. They are full of people. So it definitely has its limitation. Bicycles are permitted on the L trains in Chicago during weekday rush hour, except during weekday rush hours, 7 to 9 a.m. and 4 to 6 p.m. And they also have something called Divvy, D-I-V-V-Y, the city's public bike share system, operated by Lyft, provides bikes and e-bikes for short trips from transit, work, and other destinations. If you have a yearly membership, you can ride up to 45 minutes per time before they will charge you extra per mile as far as the use of the Divvy bike. But you know, 45 minutes can get you a lot of places. So, and remember folks, Chicago is flat, so that's really cool. They encourage you to wear helmets, they encourage you to obey traffic laws, of course, that's just obvious. Be aware of surroundings, watch for cars at driveways and alleys, exercise caution, use your discretion during winter, especially on icy days, on and on and on. And there is, like I said, the city provides downloadable bike maps for navigating the bikeway network. So the advocacy is Active Transportation Alliance is a nonprofit that works to improve conditions for cyclists and other non-motorized travelers, otherwise known as vulnerable users. That's you and me, folks. That's what we're talking about here today. So anyway, Chicago really, they have a lot of things going on. They've got campaigns, different ones that work with local residents and community leaders to create more convenient biking options. They have a program called Bikeways for All in recent years, including bicycling in Chicago has transformed from a fringe activity to a mainstream mode of transportation, opening up the benefits. And there's a learn more. Click on that if you go online and check it out. Bike Walk Every Town, walkable communities, high quality bike lanes, easy to use public transportation. These aren't pipe dreams, but attainable goals. You can learn more about that. Trail Connect in Chicagoland. The Chicago area provides opportunities to enjoy more than 1,100 miles of trails that crisscross the region. Not only are these trails fabulous recreational assets, but they're also useful for transportation. The Chicago River Trail, the ideal river trail is the idea of a river trail is not a new one, at least as far back as Daniel Burnham's 1909 plan for Chicago. And you can learn more about that. And that is at activetrans.org. More on Chicago. Yeah, a Trail Connect in Chicagoland. Now, the Chicago area provides opportunities to enjoy more than 1,100 miles of trails that crisscross the region. Not only are these trails fabulous for recreational assets, they also underutilize transportation network, providing low-stress walking and bike connections within and between communities. Despite this regional resource, too often people walking or biking on the regional trails encounter dead ends, dangerous crossings, diversions, and stressful streets and other gaps in the network. These gaps can be just a few blocks long or go on for miles. Furthermore, many trails are only accessible by getting in a car and driving to the trailhead and then proceeding by foot or bike. We have that out here too. These issues prevent people from using the trails in everyday transportation and recreation, but the surging popularity of the multi-use trails and the growing appreciation for the related health, economic, and environmental benefits can bring communities together, and it's opened a window of opportunity to make the regional trail network safer, more inviting, and more functional. Yay, Chicago! Getting a lot of thumbs up here about Chicago. So I'm just impressed. I think it's really cool what they're doing out there. I would love it if my son rode a bike. If he listens to this podcast, he's going to go, "Oh, Dad." But, you know, he thinks bikes are crazy and dangerous, and he's not wrong. He's definitely not wrong. They are crazy and dangerous. It is definitely a situation that we all are dealing with. If you ride a bicycle, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, that's what I have. So I'm going to kick that one out, and let's just go on to a few other things. I can't leave it alone. I really can't. I'm going to go on over to the bicycle racing world, and I'm going to talk about the UCI's latest rule changes that are designed to make us a little more old-fashioned. So cycling's governing body likes nothing more than to measure things, and then they decide that they're banned. So let's take a look and see what the UCI is doing right now to really drive us nuts. If you preferred the way cycling looked about 5 years ago, that's great news. The UCI International has your back, or the United Cyclists International, excuse me, UCI has your back. They have announced some forthcoming rule changes that are designed to take us all back a little bit in time. As the world's foremost slightly sarcastic appraiser of UCI rule initiatives, naturally, it fails for this author to run the measured tape over the innovations, or unovations, as we like to call it. The new rules have a simple purpose. They're designed to make road bikes and riders a bit less aerodynamic and hence a little more old-fashioned. First, the wheel rims can be no deeper than 65 millimeters. Good. I'm sorry. I'm old school. I think that's a great idea. Those really big deep dish rims, I gotta tell you, they are so dangerous. A little crosswind, anything. They're super stiff. People who are racing bicycles are the only ones who really should be on those. Yeah, that's a shout out to my friends who went out and bought fancy aero wheels and think they're the best thing they ever put their bodies on, but they don't know how to handle them in tricky situations. And I have been the victim of that. I'm not going to get into the description of it at this time. But most interestingly, they've also, they're going to do something about time trial helmets being used in road stages, but they haven't really worked that out. More interestingly, handlebars will have to be a minimum of 40 centimeters wide. This is ridiculous. Don't even get me started. There are people with very narrow shoulders, and because of that, they need narrower bars to get a proper fit on the bike, to be comfortable on the bike, and to avoid injury. I do want to begin to talk about this. This is particularly a problem with women on bicycles. So it's very, very, it's sexist, and it is a problem because lots of women are not built as broad as men are, and because of that, they need the narrower bars. I think I have Fran on a set of 38 centimeter bars right now because she's not a big person, and 38s work better for her. They're more comfortable for her. They fit better. When you do a bike fit, you do the numbers. 38 works for her. I ride on a 40. I used to ride on a 42 because I thought that was the thing to do. But, you know, as you get older and you start learning a little bit more about your body and about bike fit and comfort, then you start taking a really close look at little tweaks that you can do on your bike. So, you know, that is definitely an issue. And there are riders that were slimming down and going down to even down to like 35 or 36 centimeter bars, which are really narrow. They're also turning their brake levers a certain way so they could be more aerodynamic on the bike. Yeah, they're going to start looking at that a little closer. So, hello, UCI. You are doing so many good things for me. So bike fitters are having a collective meltdown about this. They say most riders need a narrower setup for morphological reasons. There will be injuries, discomfort, sore shoulders, and more. For the moment, we're going to overlook the fact that many bike fitters, though, and not by any means all, only experience this with about narrower bars in the wake of World Tour pros adopting them, and most of those are so driven by wind tunnel testing rather than morphology. I like that word. That's a good word. So, What they're not doing is they're not paying attention. And I love the UCI. I love their 6-inch sock rule and all the lovely, stupid things they do. But let's, instead of worrying about what's going on here with these bicycles and making these changes, which some of them I agree are necessary, let's work on making the races safer. Like the finish line safer, less sharp turns at the end of a race if it's a big sprint race, more protection on long climbs that are going down deadly, deadly descents and at really steep angles because of the fact that they're making the hills steeper and tougher for the cyclists to increase the competition in the race, but not thinking about the fact that you got to go down the other side of this thing and you're going to be going at such high speed that you could lose control of the bike. There's no guardrails and you're going to fly off the edge of a cliff. I said it, I did it, I'm out of there. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. The UCI just continues to aggravate me in so, so many ways in some of their rules. And, you know, that's just what we got. So I am going to stop on that one right now. And let's go here. Let's see, I got a few other things but I may not have a whole lot of time for. So here we go. A bit otherworldly, groundbreaking first aluminum velodrome opened in the United States. 250 millimeter track is only 5 one of only five in the country. Aluminum velodrome. Forget wood, concrete, or asphalt. The first aluminum velodrome has been officially unveiled in Tucson, Arizona. The open-air track, which took 26 months to construct, is built to Olympic standards, measures 250 meters, and has a 42-degree banking. The unique material was chosen to withstand the hot temperatures of the Arizona desert, where it can exceed 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 38 degrees centigrade during the summer. Aluminum is highly durable, weather resistant, and unlikely to suffer surface degradation such as cracking, warping, and in all the other things that happen in the heat. It makes for a wonderful ride. It's very smooth and unique way for the 42 degree Olympic track type angle on it. Tucson's new velodrome is now one of five 250 meter tracks in the United States. The other four are located in Erie, Colorado, Rock Hill, South Carolina, Carson, California, Los Angeles, and where the Olympics will be held in 2028. The project is said to have a cost of about $5 million and was funded by private donations. It's situated on a plot by the Musselman Honda Circuit, a go-kart track southeast of Houston. Hey, Hartford. Remember how I've talked about how Hartford could be the cycling mecca of New England? Maybe it's time to bring in one of these really cool aluminum tracks. It could be outdoors. You don't have to worry about it in the wintertime. It's not going to suffer from the elements that we have. And, you know, it's an idea. It's an idea. I'm trying to envision something that Sue Daniello had wanted to do for years. She was a real advocate for putting a track in Connecticut. But I'm thinking center of the state, somewhere around the Hartford area, like real close to where we had our national cyclocross championships, real close to where we had our prestigious Travelers Criterium years ago. I think there's a calling here for this. But anyway, we'll move on. Yeah, aluminum track. Never would have guessed it. So here we are. We're at the end of the line here. I think I've covered almost everything that I can cover. I missed on a couple of things here, but that's okay. We got one more Project Mayhem Cyclocross series coming up, and that is at the end of November. The last one was last weekend, so just one to go on that. The UCI racing calendar is out right now. And let's just finish this up. Give us your opinion, please. Send in. You can email me. You can make a comment below here on Facebook Live if you want to do that, or on the YouTube channel. Love to hear from you. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier, healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike. And do your part. Do something about it. Show up to a town meeting. Bring your proposals. Bring your ideas. It's a great thing. Also, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking your car for a day and ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, you can leave a comment down here below, or you can do the same thing on the YouTube channel. And if you want to get a hold of me directly, go to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on the Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!